Good evening, James McKinney with my Science Hour for May 10th, 2018, and time racing by this year. I hope this is not like last year where it just flies by. We have to take time out and enjoy life. I think too many of us forget about that. And I myself feel like I should be doing more golfing and less work, but The reality is I feel like a guy in a boat in a rushing river and going down like the Colorado River, you know, and I can't get out of the boat and I can't stop the rushing river. And the rushing river is all of the good things happening in my scientific life. So anyway, and I'm pretty sure most of you know about what's going on there. Okay, many varying topics to cover tonight in the news. NASA InSight mission going to Mars, and they're going to prove what they claim they already know, that the solar system formed 4.5 billion years ago and nothing has happened since. So why bother? I always say that it's very strange that they send out missions to try and discover what happened, and they tell you what the results are going to be before they even launch the rocket. So anyway, new probe on its way to Mars. But also in the news on Mars is that there is a Humans to Mars summit that is ended today. It has been going on for the last couple of days, and it's being at least attended to by new director of NASA. NASA has not had a director for 15 months. So anyway, they finally approved this guy. His name is Jim Bridenstine, or Stein, I should say. That's probably Bridenstein. I think that's how it's pronounced. That would be proper English. And anyway, his first mission as NASA director is to attend the Humans to Mars Summit, which is basically not a lot of science and a whole lot of animation. So anyway, as you know, Trump wants NASA to go to the moon again. Says, no, boys, you're not going to go to Mars first, because he knows the gig. He can smell the situation there. But the Humans to Mars Summit is attended by futurists, past astronauts, etc., and with the idea that man is going to go to Mars. Well, you know, we've probably not gotten a lot closer to going to Mars since Flash Gordon went there in the 1930s in the movies, you know, the Flash Gordon series. But anyway, I thought it was interesting that there are some so-called myths about Mars that have occurred during the ages, and you probably all heard about these, that there were dark oceans, some kind of murky oceans on Mars. And when they first saw Mars through telescopes, it was like, okay, it looks like there's something going on there, like maybe dirty oceans. So that was one of them. And then canals. I think it was Percival Lowell who popularized the idea, but it had been floating around scientific circles prior to that, that there was a dying race of humans, or Martians, I should say, not humans, but Martians, whoever they might be. And they had a desertification. The entire planet Mars was turning into a desert, so they had to build these canals across the surface to channel water so that they could exist. Very interesting. But anyway, that was the canals on Mars. And then it was H.G. Wells in the, when was the War of the Worlds? But anyway, he came on the air on the radio back in the, let me see, when was that? Well, first let me get the story straight. There's two people named Wells involved in this story. There was the original book by H.G. Wells, and this was a novel that occurred, and it was popularized in the late 1800s. So 1897, 1898 was the book War of the Worlds. And it was like a pre-World War I setting where the monsters from Mars came and attacked the armies of the world. But then in 1938, it was the Halloween issue of the Orson Welles Radio Hour. And so anyway, he came on the air and just started blasting this out as if it were a news report. And people jumped out of buildings. This took place in, allegedly, the Martians were attacking New Jersey. And, you know, he said, they're killing the army. You know, there's no way to withstand this. And you can hear the whole broadcast. You go to YouTube. It's an educational experience. But after that, they required station breaks. That's where station breaks came from, to break up the show and then also to announce if there was anything fictional going on, that this is fiction, you know, that you would have to announce that or whatever, and then proceed with the show, because he just went right through the whole deal and people thought it was real. You know, that was back in the early days of live radio, and goodness, you know, I've done my share of live radio in my life, and it gets interesting. There's some interesting things that happen on live radio. I mean, you're there. You're in the microphone and the people are listening and there's no delay at all. And the type of radio shows I'm on, I think some of the big shows, like television shows, actually have people there to make sure that nothing offensive gets out, where they can like cut it off and take out, put bleeps in for bad words or whatever. But the kind of live radio I do and have done in both my shows and interviews, it's live. You're there. You know, whatever's going on is going on. So you got to be awake and on your feet, on your toes. But anyway, Orson Welles, October 30th, the Halloween issue, 1938, of his weekly broadcast comes on and starts going through this narrative that the United States is being attacked and the Martians are here, and the people believed it. Anyway, then we have the Face on Mars issue. That went on for a long time. And I was a guest many times on the Art Bell Show. And Richard Hoagland was, of course, one of the top appearing guests on the Art Bell Show. And one, he had many different claims, many different, always something, you know, his scientific view of things or whatever. But at the very end, Art finally told him, look, I'm not going to have any more Face on Mars stuff. But the Cydonia volcano is what it is. It's a volcano. And I think it's interesting because if you look at the Haleakala volcano of the Hawaiian Islands, it's a very similar volcano in which the if you look at the light, if the light's coming from the east in the winter time from Haleakala, you get that same shadowy effect and it looks like a mouth open, and you could get that same type of effect. But what it is, it's a volcanic crater that is breached on one side, and then the lava has flowed down, but it gives you the image kind of a mouth open with a kind of drooling out the side, so to speak. But that's what Cydonia is. It's simply a volcano on Mars. And so there should be plenty of high-resolution photos of this. But the terrible, terrible low-resolution photography that they pawn off on you, the public, in spite of the fact that NASA has voluminous amounts of very high-resolution photography of the Martian surface from space, not to mention the rovers, etc., where there is a close-up of the ground, features on Mars. But anyway, that was another one of these myths that comes along. But the Cydonia myth was carried along primarily by many people, but primarily Richard Hoagland. And I thought it was interesting one time. This was after George Norrie took over the Coast to Coast AM, quite a few years after Art Bell left the show, and George Norrie was there. I was talking with Lisa Lyons, who's the producer in of Coast to Coast AM. And so anyway, she was looking at how many times I had appeared on the Coast to Coast AM show. And she said, my goodness, she counted, and she said, I had appeared on the show more times than Richard Hoagland, which I thought was interesting. So that would be hard to do, but that's how many times I made appearances on that show. And then also going back into the Art Bell days, back to the the Hale Bopp days, oh my goodness. So anyway, then once again related to Mars, Flash Gordon. And this is one of my favorites because I watched the TV series as a kid in the 1950s. And this was the premier show for what we call the cliffhanger. The cliffhanger is where, you know, I think there were half-hour episodes. I can't remember. But as a kid, I mean, I just couldn't wait till Saturday morning until Flash Gordon came on. And go down, turn the TV on, be sitting there. And the week before, there was imminent death for Flash Gordon and his cohorts. I mean, they were in some predicament, and they were hanging off, you know, the cliff by their fingernails. And, you know, and you just knew that, and then you had to wait until next week for it to roll around and see what happened. And they would get out of the pickle, whatever it was, and then come back, and they'd have all their adventures again. Really well written, really very well written. And then the next week, they'd go through the same scenario, to have their adventures, whatever. And then at the very end, you know, it's the cliffhanger again. And, oh, my goodness, we got to wait till next week for the Flash Gordon to come back to see what happened. And so anyway, but the original Flash Gordon was a comic book that came out in 1934. And it was commensurate with another space character named Buck Rogers. So anyway, the original 13-part series of Flash Gordon was in 1936. It was done for the theaters. And then 1954, it was done for television. But then there was the always loving characters like Ming the Merciless, etc. And anyway, very interesting. But Mars has always held a bit of charm because it's the red planet. It's, used to be a blue planet, and according to the ancients, which Velikovsky pointed out, used to be a blue planet, but I thought it was interesting that people never talk in regards to Mars about Baal, B-A-apostrophe-A-L, and who was a character in, going back to the Sumerians, Babylonians. And allegedly, Baal was from Mars and brought banking to Earth. And so the banking systems that we have today, this was back, you know, in prehistory, literally, where they came in and allegedly landed in what is now Transylvania, which was the, by the way, where the Rothschilds have some of their stomping grounds. I announced last a month and a half, that the Rothschilds had sold one of their Bavarian hunting camps, which had, 5,000 acres in the Bavarian Alps. And that was the location for the Grimm Brothers fairy tales, which some of them were not so nice. They had to do, well, I won't go into detail on this show, but look into that if you want to have some, you know, we always think of fairy tales as for kids and stuff. But the Grimm Brothers fairy tales, some of them were interesting, but some of them were pretty dastardly or nefarious or downright evil human conduct. So anyway, but related then again to Baal, and Baal worship is something that goes on today. You've heard of Bohemian Grove. Well, that's Baal worship. And there are people, including past presidents, who took part in that and still do. So anyway, you don't see that name come up. And that's the basis, by the way, for many of our English languages, like Baal. to bail out, and that's the implication is with bailout of Mars, and the bail is when you are in jail and you pay money so that you can get out of jail. That's bail. And so there, I could go through a whole laundry list of words that are based on the term of the name Baal, the ancient name of Baal. And the like I say, Baal worship is something that continues today. Much of the darker side and the people that you find, like the John Kerry's, the Clintons, the Bushes, that are involved in Skull and Bones, which is another aspect of all of this. You know, the Mullers of the world, the, you know, you could go through the pretty much almost all of Washington, and somehow these people are involved in this rather nefarious edgy part of the human race. Okay, so, but the real issues about Mars are never talked about, and certainly never the real issues that Mars was once a blue planet with oceans. And this was in historical times, and NASA keeps fumbling around like they're sending out this new InSight mission, supposedly looking for to dig deep into the Martian surface and garner information. But they've already, like I say, got it decided what the results will mean. I'm just going to make this announcement. It's going to be brief. But the deep state, what we call deep state, which has a kind of a broad paintbrush meaning, but basically the World Bank and its minions who are operating in Washington are still very much involved in going around and manipulating in the world. For example, they just discovered that John Kerry has been going to Iran to undermine the effort to undo the Iranian, what's known as the Iranian deal, where Obama turned over vast amounts of uranium through Russia, and that's part of that Uranium One issue you keep hearing about, to Russia, and then that uranium ended up in Iran. And also they paid them in cash, I can't even remember the number, hundreds of billions of dollars, literally bringing it over to Iran in cash. And so recently, John Kerry is over in Iran. Nobody knows what he's doing there. He's not anywhere involved in government. But I have other examples. I'm not going to give them. I'm not going to use my airtime on this show to discuss all of the activities of the CIA and their operatives, some of them street levels, some of them go all the way up to high level like Kerry, operating in the world to run the world from a rogue government, the shadow government that's still very much operational. And so anyway, just going to say that. The deep state is alive and well and operating all over the world, in spite of the fact that there are big efforts to quell this and bring it under control. The deep state is very alive and active worldwide, including trying to rig or influence elections. And so anyway, if you've heard my other, say, interviews recently, you will know what I'm talking about there. Just quick update on Jupiter. Approximately every 13 months, we have what is known as an opposition. Now, when Venus comes between us and the sun, we call that an inferior conjunction. And we have activity that happens when Venus and Mercury come between us and the sun. And if they both do it exactly the same time, then more things happen electrically. But when a planet that is outside of our orbit is in alignment with the sun, we call it an opposition. So Jupiter, on this past Tuesday, was in opposition. which means that if you went out at midnight, you would see Jupiter up in the night sky, very bright, clearly the brightest thing in the sky. So, and associated with that is what I have termed the Jupiter winds. So if you have been in a place where it's quite windy recently, more so than average, then it might be safe to say that that's due to the Jupiter winds. And what happens is that the electrical discharge between Jupiter and the sun, it's a long linear electrical discharge between Jupiter and the sun. And you see these, by the way, in comet tails. You see the sunward spike sometimes, and then you see a tail. It's called a type 2 tail. It's a thin linear tail that goes out from the comet, and it is illuminated. Sometimes it's visible to the naked eye if it's a big comet, but it's offset from the big fuzzy white comet tail, which is the plasma tail, and that's the material coming into the comet nucleus. But the type 2 tail, the thin type 2 tail, is literally the electron discharge coming out from the sun that passes by the nucleus, charging up the nucleus to a negative potential, and then it keeps going. Well, the planets do this too, and they mistakenly call this effect on the nighttime side of Jupiter, they call it a magnetic tail, which is a misnomer. And so anyway, when Jupiter comes into alignment with Earth, then Earth's electrical discharge and Jupiter's line up, they connect together, and it enhances our overall weather system. And so if you want to understand more about this, read my weather book, The Principia Meteorologiae, The Physics of Sun-Earth Weather, which is available on my webpage. And, of course, you would want to read first the Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes book, and the Atlantis to Tesla book, The Colburn Connection. Those books you'd want to read first to give you the background to understand what's in the weather book. So anyway, Tuesday was the official lineal alignment. That's the visual alignment that Jupiter, the Sun, and Earth are aligned. But the winds don't always necessarily correspond with the optical alignment, because the solar wind comes out and it bends, etc. So when exactly we connect electrically to Jupiter is not always on the optical alignment date. So at any rate, some of the bigger winds may be yet to come. But anyway, this is, like I say, about every 13 months, Jupiter takes about 10 years to go around the sun, and Earth goes around the sun in 1 year. So we go like 12 months plus a month, approximately, and then we line up with Jupiter again because it's moving ahead in its orbit also. So about every 13 months, we have this opposition with Jupiter. So last Tuesday, that happened. Just a quick note on the Chinese space program. They are moving ahead. I don't know what NASA's thinking, but China is literally way ahead of us in space right now. They have launch vehicles. They have rockets. They have a program, and they have literally a city that they built around their launch facility where all the scientists involved in the space program go. And in the United States, you have it spread all over the place. And so, but anyway, for the United States to organize like that, there's the real problem is NASA was set up based on what I call Congress proof. In other words, they put little smidgens of NASA all over the place. So there was in many congressional districts. And the reason they did that was to assure that Congress would always vote whatever budget came about for NASA, whatever project or whatever, that it would be in every district. And the leverage they have over the congressmen or the representatives is that if you voted no against a NASA appropriation, then you would not be in office. They'd come in and say, look, and what they would do is they'd target the jobs or the small businesses or whatever that were in that congressman or representative's district and say, oh, well, that's where we got to make the cuts because your congressman voted against it. And gee, we're sorry. But so every congressman knows that. So that's why NASA's budgets always get passed. And even Trump is aware of this. When he cut budgets last year, his first year in office, right after he got into office, he slashed budgets, the EPA 50%, other offices, agencies, huge cuts. And NASA got everything, even though Trump doesn't believe that NASA is doing a very good job, and he'll always make the rah-rah speeches saying that he thinks they're doing a good job. But he knows, and that's why he's forcing them to go to the moon instead of this this 20-year, 30-year program to go to Mars where they don't have to do anything. And they can all retire and go golfing without ever having to do anything. And Trump's not going to let them do that. Because if they could go to the moon in 7 years before, and that's the time frames he's giving NASA. If they don't have their act together in 7 years, they're going to be bye-bye. And they don't really realize this. They don't really know that the clock is ticking. As long as they get their annual budget allotment, they think they're going to be doing good. And so they sit back, as they've always done, on their laurels, which, by the way, are pretty thin. Okay, so anyway, a note on the Chinese space program that they are really going gangbusters in outer space. And we're going to be, I've often said this, we're going to get to the moon, and the big Apollo program, whatever they call it at the time, the Orion program or whatever they decide to call it, they're going to get there and the astronauts are going to step out and they'll be able to go down to the corner and buy Chinese food takeout. That's my prediction. So anyway, now I'm going to talk about volcanic activity, eruptions, because Hawaii is in the news this week with a big volcanic eruption. And I happen to be somewhat familiar with this area because I've studied this, the rift zones, etc. But first of all, they should have never allowed these people to build homes on the southern flank of this volcano. I mean, the idea that you would build a house in a volcanically active area underneath, downhill from the world's most active volcano, which has been continually active for 25 years, minimal, probably more, Kilauea. To imagine that you would allow people to build houses in this area is just, I'm speechless. I don't know what to say. You know, they talk about building your house on sand or on, you know, that you should have a good foundation. Building it on the world's hottest hotspot, volcanic rift zone, just not a good idea. And I'm sure most of those, or if not all those people, could not get insurance. So their loss is a total loss. So it's financially devastating for thousands and thousands of homeowners there. But anyway, about the earthquakes associated with this, there was a 6.9, and then there was a cluster, they said 110 earthquakes, within the period of 1 week, and there are thousands. And of course, this is a volcanically active area. They have earthquakes all the time, but this series, this swarm of earthquakes that occurred in the last couple weeks, clearly moved things enough to where the land started oozing. And I understand there was one plume 1,500 feet high. But this is not, this is a, called a shield volcano. You know, just the lava oozes out and flows down the hill. It's not the explosive type that, like Mount St. Helens, where it blew the top of the mountain 60 miles into the air and turned it into pulverized ash that then swept across the countryside as far as New York City in the wind. But anyway, geologists are not certain where this is going to go. There's no way to predict if it's going to get worse, if it's going to connect into the other vents or parts of Mauna Loa. Is the big volcano there, which is what, 13,000 feet high, and Kilauea is off on the one of the southeast flanks of Mauna Loa. But at any rate, probably a lot of you have visited this area. There's a national park there. So anyway, we'll see. But somebody sent me a YouTube video link. And by the way, I always say, just don't believe anything you read on, see on YouTube. It's great for, I like YouTube for watching informational things on, you know, devices people have invented, or the latest electrical bicycle, or, you know, there's a lot of things that are historical on there, historical information. But when it comes to science, that should not be your source of science. YouTube, I don't post there, never have. I've got some stuff that I do, which I only post on my own webpage. It's what you call embedding. And so I have them only for my webpage, only for the people that come to my webpage, plural, webpages, and for them to see, and then it's surrounded by my information, etc. But as far as having a YouTube channel out there with lots of subscribers, all that stuff, I don't do any of that. Never have, never will. And it's tempting sometimes because it could generate traffic, it could increase sales, all this stuff. But no, YouTube is a pile of donkey dung. It's really bad. But anyway, somebody sent me this link relative to the Hawaiian volcano, and there's some yo-yo out there. It's like BP Earth or some stupid thing. This guy thinks he's some kind of a plasma physicist, and he says, oh, because the solar wind picked up, that caused the Hawaiian volcano. No, no, no. No, it didn't. And he's trying to copy my work because I have talked about impulses that can affect the Earth, but I also have disclaimers on there that not every earthquake or volcano is caused by solar wind action. And it's simply not. And in this case, this activity at Hawaii has been going on for 25 years. So it's not like a little bit of increase in the solar wind this past week did something to cause this volcano to go off. It's absurd. And then they got videos saying, oh, well, Jupiter or other gravitational alignments caused this. Well, no, this is the classic mistake of bad internet scientists. This is why. Earth is weightless with respect to all other objects in space because we're moving. And this was Einstein's concept of curved spacetime, is that say you are a visitor in this solar system, and you come in, you're coming straight towards the solar system. Okay, now as you start to interact with the planets, you know, Jupiter and Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, Earth, or whatever, you start to move on visually a curved line. But in terms of space-time, you're going in a straight line. And it's a non-inertial frame of reference. In other words, when astronauts go around the Earth, they're weightless. Well, why should they be weightless? Because here's Earth right there that's a gravitational body. Well, it's the centrifugal force that opposes the centripetal force, and the end force on the person, the astronaut in the space capsule, is zero. So they're weightless. And if you could stop that space capsule from moving at 17,000 miles an hour and just hold it there somehow, build a big pillar or a skyscraper and out to low Earth orbit, and somebody stood there, then they would have gravity. They would feel the Earth's gravity because they're not in orbit around the Earth. And they're not moving at 17,000 miles an hour, which is basically gives you a curved path that's just right to keep you in orbit around the Earth. So they're weightless. And likewise, any object moving through space is weightless with respect to all other celestial bodies. And so we are weightless with respect to Jupiter, with respect to Venus, etc. And so if you get very close to a celestial object, there are differential forces, and I'm not going to go into that on this show. But those are close-range forces. You got to be like right there, like our lunar tides are short-range differential forces because the moon pulls harder on one side of the Earth than it does on the other side of the Earth. So the water on the close side to the moon raises up just a little bit. In fact, the land does too. There are tidal waves in the land that are caused by the moon, but that's a differential force. That's not, in general, we are weightless with respect to the moon, and we are weightless with respect to Jupiter, etc. So these yo-yos that go on YouTube and then just put out garbage, you know, and unfortunately, people listen to this, watch it, and think that this yo-yo is some kind of a scientist. He's a bozo. So take BP Earth, cross it off your list as a source of information. The guy's a complete idiot. And like I say, trying to copy my work, which is legitimate, and there are legitimate times to talk about the solar wind doing things. And he says, for example, the force comes down the magnetic lines of Earth to cause earthquakes. Well, the guy doesn't even know how to talk about electromagnetism or forces, or he's an idiot. The guy is a complete idiot. So cross that one off your list. In fact, in general, cross YouTube off your list in terms of science. And, you know, if you want to get science, I'm probably the only person on the planet that will give you the real story. You're not going to get it from NASA, goodness knows. You're not going to get it on YouTube. And really, there's people are out there running around pretending they're scientists, and they're not. They have no scientific background. Anyway, I'm not going to chirp about that. But just beware of YouTube. It's not the place to get scientific information. So I'm going to discuss a little bit more. A number of weeks ago, in fact, I talked about volcanoes and worldwide activity, etc. But I'm going to go back to the Grand Canyon for a minute, which is not a volcano. But the question many times is, what caused the Grand Canyon? And I've flown over the Grand Canyon. I've been in the Grand Canyon. I've been at Bryce Canyon, and I've explored these regions, and what's very clear is, now this just happened in New Zealand. There was a rift that just opened up in the earth. It just like split apart, and there's a big gap in the earth. And what's interesting, the way you know that this is what happened is because up at the end of the fissure in the earth's surface is a very narrow, it comes together and then the earth just comes back together. So it's like the earth just in this region just split apart. And what happens is these are sinkholes. So what's going on down below is that water is moving down below. And if you look at, for example, the Colorado River, which runs down through that basin under the Grand Canyon, down through the channel there, that at one time was an underground river. And it carved away and carved away until there was literally, and the earth would fall in, till basically this was a cave going through the earth with water moving in it. And finally, it just fell in, and eventually it all washed away over time. But that's what formed the Grand Canyon. So it's a fissure. in the Earth's surface and caused by basically an underground river. And of course, planets coming near Earth and shaking the Earth would help these processes, like, for example, Bryce Canyon. If you ever have a chance, go to the Bryce Canyon. There's visitor centers there. And if you look out, what you're going to see is a vast area, probably 30 miles across, maybe more. And it's just sunken down. And you can see the layering of the pieces down below that match the layering in the earth up along the canyon walls. So you can just see this all had fallen in. So it was a giant lava tube, probably with water running underneath of it. And one day, possibly as a large comet nucleus came by Earth, it shook the earthquake and whoosh, the whole thing just fell in. And you can see this clearly. I've talked about this on my show before. But it's very clear that the Grand Canyon, there's people running around saying it was a electrical discharge from a comet that burned it out. Well, if that were the case, you would see round beads of silicates all over the place, and you don't find that. What happened if it allegedly burned out from an electrical discharge? What happened to this vast amount of earth that somehow turned into some other form? And what it would have turned into is glass beads. The whole desert would be strewn with glass beads, and you don't even find one, let alone, you know, that volume of earth turned into glass beads. So, you know, you can check that one off your list as a sane resolution of what caused the Grand Canyon. But we find these mini Grand Canyons all over the world. We find them on Mars. We find them on other icy planets. You find fissures that just break apart. And typically it's due to water erosion underneath, and then they fall in. So the Grand Canyon clearly forming from that. And the very telltale sign is when you get up to the very end of the canyon, like I've flown over the north end of the Grand Canyon, and it comes to the canyon is there. It comes, the walls come closer and closer. They come closer together. And it just ends. It's almost like a knife cut. That's how sharp it is, the gouge into the earth. And then you have the level earth there at the very end, and that's the end of it. So the earth literally broke apart. It just separated. And what causes that? Well, if there's a big gap underneath, then it just fell in. And eventually the river, this underground river, just kept washing it away. And, eventually you have the Grand Canyon. But like I say, you see these in all over the world. And one just occurred in New Zealand. And there was no comet coming by. There was no gravitational interaction. There was no earthquake associated with it. It just split apart and opened up, and there again you see the fissure as it comes up to the end. It just, the walls of the fissure come together, meet, and then you have level, normal ground at the end of that. So that tells you something, and so I hope you can go to Bryce Canyon. It's very hard to take pictures because Bryce Canyon is such a big vista, but if you happen to get there, you look at the canyon walls, and then you look down into the canyon and look at the stratification of these islands of land that have fallen down. And basically, you can match up the layers in the ground with the earth and the side wall of the canyon that are thousands of feet above. So literally, you can see that this whole thing just fell in. Okay, so enough of that. And just a little bit of a comment. There's some very good web pages, especially for kids. This is kind of a fun exercise. Go to the web pages. Let me just see if I can pull one up here that one of my favorites. Let me just see if I can quick pull this up. It is called, let me go back here. It is called earthquakes.volcanodiscovery.com. And so let me go back, see if I can get to the main page here. But anyway, just type in worldwide volcano map, and you'll have plenty of, volcanodiscovery.com. That's one of my favorites. But there's many pages. There's U.S. Geological Survey pages, worldwide volcano map. Put that in a search engine and then start exploring. And it's, we live on a very active Earth. Earth is an extremely active planet geologically. And the reason for that is because recently within geological time, we've had quite a bit of activity. And this would not be the case if it were not for large passing objects in outer space. The most recent one being a number of thousands of years ago. And Velikovsky talks about this in his books. And what Velikovsky did is he just went back into ancient texts and found a timeline when all of these ancients were talking about the same event, the Venus event. Venus coming by is a large comet. And of course, if you were a student of standard science, that would make absolutely no sense at all. If you thought comets were dirty snowballs and that they were little and they were harmless, then there's no way that this comet could come by Earth and do damage and become the planet Venus. And that's where, of course, I ran into trouble when I was at Cornell, was because I had been out of the country for quite a long time. And so I come back, I end up at Cornell University teaching in a physics department, and I'm working on my theoretical work, publishing my papers, and saying that comets could not be dirty snowballs, that they could be large, they could become planets, and the tail drag is what causes the orbits to circularize, and not realizing that that I had nothing, I had no knowledge of Velikovsky at that point. And I had no knowledge of Sagan being the guy who squelched Velikovsky. And that happened in 1974? Yeah, Velikovsky died in 76. The American Association for the Advancement of Science meeting with Sagan and all the boys there, Stephen Gould and the rest of them, attacking Velikovsky was 1974. I show up at Cornell in 1979 when they think, oh, good, this has all gone away. And then what? McCanny shows up and starts publishing that comets are not dirty snowballs, that they can become planets, the big ones, the tail drag, how do they become planets, what's the process, the electrical nature of comets, and kaboom, you know, talk about landing in a hornet's nest. And not knowing it, well, now I know the history. I know everything that was going on, of course. And I found out, who rules the roost there. But anyway, that's all history. Back to volcanoes, especially kids, yeah, go out and learn about volcanoes. But imagine Earth is a planet, a formative, billions of years ago, whenever it was, that the Earth finally formed. The Earth was a comet. That's why it has a very hard core, is because that was the original seed, the original comet nucleus around which everything formed. And so then it built and built until it finally got to the planet we have today with the atmosphere, with the water and the oceans and everything. That's the other thing, is standard science cannot tell you where the oceans came from, or why certain oceans have salt, or why the ancient salt beds in the Himalayan mountains has a different salt content than what our oceans have today. They can't tell you any of this, and they don't even try. They just don't. It doesn't even appear in a book, let alone a textbook. So anyway, but imagine a planet that was newly formed, hot, molten, bubbling like Venus is, and it starts to cool. And first it goes through what I call the nuclear stage. That's when it's so hot that you still have nuclear processes going on. And then it cools down into the chemical state. And then it solidifies around the outside, just like Like if you let your oatmeal cool in the morning, it would form like a hard crust on the outside, and eventually that thickens and becomes the crust of the earth. But then again, there's hot spots like the volcanic island of Hawaii where it's still coming through. But if there were such a scenario, and if there were no outside interaction with anything else for the rest of the life of this planet, then it would cool and it would cool, and eventually the what we call plates would cool and they would break apart, and there would be big gaps between the plates, and they would continue to cool and they would move on all sides of the plate away from the adjacent plates. And there would be no reason for these plates to move around the planet, like they say. You know, where's the force? Where's the magical force that causes entire continents to just kind of slide around the planet? Things require energy. Things require force. And so where does this come from? And then you would not have volcanic activity, because if there were volcanic activity, it would just solidify and like a cut on your hand, so to speak, as the lava flowed up, it would solidify, put pressure on that location, and then you would not have volcanic eruptions there anymore. But now imagine a big object comes by in outer space, sets up a gravitational wave, and jars all these plates, slams them over, one over the other. You know, they're being crunched, they're being pulled, the plates that were down low in the ocean are now being thrust up, you know, 14,000 feet in the air, causing mountains to form overnight. This is what our world is made of. This is what why we live in a volcanically active world. This is why we have volcanoes all around the rims of the plates. And this is why there's volcanic and earthquake activity around the edges of the plates. It's not because the earth did this all by itself. That is the most ludicrous, ridiculous thing. You know, it can't happen. There's, you know, where's the force? I hope there's some, maybe you're a college student, you're in a geology class, and they're teaching plate tectonics, and raise your hand and say, where is the force that causes plates to move sideways? Ask your geology teacher here, and 9 times out of 10, or about 999 times out of 1,000, your geology professor never completed more than grade 1 or 2 level physics in college, if even that. In fact, then your next question, when he can't answer that, say, hey, what's the highest level of physics you've had in your career? And you're going to probably get an answer like physics 101, college requirement. And so how can these guys talk about physical processes on the scale of a planet when they don't understand physics, that you need forces, you need reactions, that the idea that somehow the heat escaping from Earth causes tectonic plates to move sideways is absurd? That's absolutely absurd. It's like coming up to a table, take your finger, push down on the table. Take your finger right now, push down on the table or your desk or whatever. And now, is that desk going to move sideways? How hard do you have to push on that table to make it move sideways? And the answer is, if you pushed hard enough, your finger would just go through the desk. The desk would not move sideways at all. So where is this Herculean force that moves entire continents around the globe? Like, you know, it ain't going to happen. Is not going to happen. Could not happen. Never did happen. There is no such thing as plate tectonics. There are regions of the world, and they're incorrectly called plates, because if you imagine a plate, like your dinner plate, you put your food on it, you can hold the plate at the edge, you know, the plate is solid, but the so-called plates of the earth are not solid. They're not a solid plate, and that's the image that they give you, that somehow these things are solid, and if you push on one side of it, the whole thing's going to move, which is, again, ridiculous. Because on a scale of about, maybe 100 yards, If you could cut down with a giant chainsaw down through the mantle, down through the core of the earth, the solidified part, if you could cut into there and then take a chain and try and pick that up as one piece, it would all fall apart. This is on the scale of a football field. Try and do this on the scale of a continent, ain't going to happen. It's not a plate. That is a misnomer. That is an incorrect term, and it's an incorrect implication that this is somehow a plate. Tectonic plates? No. Just ridiculous idea. And you'll probably get thrown out of your geology class if you bring this up, because nobody can question the dogma of the religion of science today. So the end result, the Earth we see today is results from activity from large passing comets. And you can also see this, that when there were mass extinctions, the Earth didn't just jump up and do this all by itself. I always love when they talk about global warming, that somehow there was, you know, what's this due to dinosaurs passing gas or something, that, and all of a sudden the Earth jumps up and its atmosphere changes and there's a mass extinction. Once again, ludicrous. They don't have a scenario, they don't have a theory that is testable, and so they can put anything they want in a textbook and pass it off on you, the public. The only explanation is that Earth has been severely damaged by large passing comets many times. And so when I wrote my book, Planet X Comets and Earth Changes, by the way, if you have not signed up for my paid cast, my current paid cast topic is lectures going along with my book series. And right now I'm dealing with Planet X Comets and Earth Changes, the first book in the series of about 11 books that I have out. But the reason I chose the title Planet X was not because of some individual object. It's a common term in astronomy for an unnamed planet. And so the idea was to basically distribute my work to the general public. And that book has been around for a long, long time now. And of course, it's based on my papers that were published back in my original work years, the late 1970s, etc. None of which has changed, by the way. My work has remained the same since the get-go. I'm about out of time here. Just remember the webpage, jmccsci.com. The paid casts are available there. The water filters are available there. Still free shipping. And I haven't raised the prices yet. I'm still paying ridiculous prices for shipping, but keeping my prices the same. And so go, that helps support me, supports the work I do. And the paid casts are there, dealing with my books. That's a topic I've wanted to cover for a long time. And I am out of time. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we're at the crossroads. Good night.